Okay, settle down, 50. Wait, is there a player that John Sterling could make a corny home run call like where Wober.
Mac Williamson.
Woe for Williamson. Wow, he just tied the game. So this is the Cap Figure Podcast. I'm Ryan DiPaolo, and who are you?
My name is Tom McLaughlin.
Hi Tom. Hi Tom McGlock 40 and speaking
Glocks.
Of 50 Cent. So this is episode 6. You know, we're very excited. It's the middle of the baseball season. As we just referenced Mac Williamson, we're sitting here watching the end of Mad Bum versus Tanaka Flocka Flame. If Masahiro Tanaka ever hits a home run, that should be John Sterling's home run call, like, Tanaka Flocka Flame! and then play, like, I Go Hard in the Paint or some Flocka Flame song.
Oh, my God, wait. So, by the way, I went to the Yankees-Red Sox game Sunday night, and I've seen Tanaka pitch like the last 4 or 5 times I've gone to games, but I've never been there on time to see him go out to take the mound. And you know how every starting pitcher has like their own little song?
Yeah.
Like I remember last year I saw Jacob deGrom come out to play the Nationals and it was like Lynyrd Skynyrd and I was like into it. And Tanaka
that's
comes
fitting.
Out.
Like,
and
that's an example that's fitting.
It is some like Japanese pop song you would think would be like on Pokemon Go.
Oh, that's awesome. It's like
exactly.
That is awesome. That makes me so happy.
And I just look around and I'm like, what is going on?
That's
right
what gets
now?
Him pumped, dude. Like my song would be Aqua. My song would be Bar, you know, if I played in Japan, they'd be like, what is this? That's really awesome. So anyway, what's his name? Oh, just on a tangent on this. I think that it was some player on the Rockies played Justin Bieber as a song because his daughters asked him to, and it was his walk-up song, and he owned it. It was really sweet. So anyway, so this is our episode 6, and I guess our plan for the show is just kind of to take a look at teams close in the standings. I don't know, just sort of like a state of the union with the league as a whole, kind of, and we're like looking at production by position somewhat with teams, so looking at the standings, Tom, now a week after the All-Star game, you know, the seasons were more than halfway done. What stands out to you looking at the standings?
Yeah, so here we sit, you know, about a week before the trade deadline. We're going to try to take a look at certain teams and, you know, take a prediction of what's going to go forward and try and anticipate the next steps of a number of front offices. I think one thing that really sticks out to me is the Cleveland Indians. I'm looking here at their postseason chances, and a 94% chance
just
to make
aim your mouth that way
to make the playoffs, and 89% chance to win the division. The Indians are really rolling. And
wait, say that again. I was criticizing you for how you're speaking in the mic.
The Indians 94% chance to make the playoffs.
Wow.
89% chance to win the division.
So my 3-1 bet that they're not going to make it was a bad one?
Yeah, that's really a bad bet. They've taken this division by the throat. And thinking about teams looking forward to the deadline, the Indians are in a very strong position to be a buyer. They haven't been relevant in a couple of years.
Bro, I didn't ask you about the deadline. I asked you about what surprised you about the standings.
Oh, well, I'm telling you, the Indians being so far ahead, to me, 7 games ahead of Detroit, 9 games ahead of defending world champion Kansas City. Surprising to me, especially with Michael Brantley out the first half of the year.
People thought that their pitching was going to be good. I remember last year people thinking down the stretch that they could be like the Rangers, like make a run, like they're 4 or 5 games out of the All-Star, out of the second wild card spot around this time last year. But yeah, no, they're absolutely a surprise. For me, the biggest surprise to some degree is the Marlins. Like, they're a team, they have like one of the lowest payroll, I think the 3rd lowest payroll in the league, the cheap bleeps that, you know, they've got everybody to buy into the stadium, and then Brian Gumbel really, you know, got that little weasel for lying to everybody.
Yeah, he pulled the rug out from under him.
Well put, Brian. And they're ahead of the Mets by half a game. And, you know, they're certainly a surprise to me. They would be in the wild card game if it were today against the Dodgers. So that surprises me, as well as Pittsburgh probably being you know, only three games over 500. Well, everything else seems to be chalk, no?
Well, the Pirates, to me, I think, you know, a part of it has to do with the injuries and the turnover at certain positions, but they're just in a tough division. I mean, you look at the beginning of the season and even right now, the Cubs, the Cardinals, and the Pirates, it's arguably three of the best five teams in baseball. So the Pirates, I think, are just getting a little bit beaten up by the fact that they're in that division. With the Marlins, though, you take a look at their run differential, and they're only plus 16.
What are teams like? What's the Mets, for example? Do you see it? Find the Mets.
The Mets are plus 46.
Wow. See, I knew it. You know, I said that to you before the show, that it feels like the Mets are a better team than them, even though they're half a game back, and that kind of validates that for me.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll come back down to earth, the Marlins.
It does validate it. What's interesting, though, is the Nationals have a stranglehold on that division. If you go purely by the numbers, they have a 78% chance to win the division. So between the Mets and the Marlins.
What are the Mets' chance, it says, for the division?
So the Mets probably have nothing. A 12% chance to win the division, 40% chance to make the playoffs. The Marlins closely echo the Mets with an 11% chance to win the division, 38% chance to make the playoffs. So what I'm getting from this is the Mets and the Marlins are sort of a toss-up to win that second wild card.
Or they equally have it. It's not like last year where just the Mets and Nationals were fighting for it. So the other thing, before we go into some of these teams specifically in more detail, that I want to ask, I mean, that just surprises me. Like, is the AL East, two things. The AL East, everybody kind of thought a lot of people were picking the Red Sox to win, and the Blue Jays are picking it back up. But obviously the Orioles, and we talked about them last time. But really, the Astros are now only 3.5 games back of the Rangers, and they started so bad. 3.5 games back, and they started out like 6-18 or something. They dug themselves such a bad hole that, like, I was telling you earlier, I forget what the number was, but it was at that point it was like, oh, for them to reach 90 wins, they have to be 720 the rest of the way or something crazy. And they've been doing it. So, and Texas has been bad. What do you think about the AL East?
The AL East, so, you know, my pick is still Boston. Toronto is a scary team to me, too, as well. That lineup, you know, I just would not want to face them. So
it's funny. It's like a softball league. Like all the team, like those three teams, the Orioles, the Blue Jays, and the Red Sox are like just like mashed. They're just softball teams.
And so I mean, today my pick is Boston. They just have the deepest farm system. Things look to be falling into place for them.
What are you talking about a farm for? We're talking about today.
Talking about today. Well,
yeah, we're trying to win this year, Tom.
I'm looking forward to next week when they, you know, turn some of those assets into tangible players for right now.
All right, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gotten angry about you about the farm, mentioning the farm. I guess it's relevant because they also were in contention for Rich Hill. Okay, so now what we're going to do is I'm gonna ask you something, okay? And I want you to...
X away.
I want you to answer, do you know who has gotten the least production of any team out of catcher?
The Cleveland Indians.
By negative one whole wins. And the next closest is by 0.6 wins. And the next closest to that is 0.1 wins. And then everybody else is positive war. They're so bad at catcher. Wait, let me back up. So now that we're going to... Now we've talked about a little bit about our takeaway on the standings. Let's dive into... This sucks, this episode so far, but we're going to, you know, guys, just stick with us and you know, we'll get it together. So, talking about the standings and what our first, like, thoughts are looking at them this week, a week after the All-Star game, it's then like, okay, these interesting teams, like, where can they get better? And it's fun, you know, we were just looking at, like, ratings by position, and like I just mentioned, the Indians are so bad at catcher, I don't know. Do you think they need to get better? They're seven games up, right?
Yeah, that was actually the thing that kind of stood out to me when I looked at that with the Indians was that they have the 89% chance to win the division.
Right.
You know, all rational things would say, like, you need to upgrade catcher because you know, that is the one position that they're obviously leaking a ton of value.
Right, so right, it's so obvious.
And their inherent, you know, gain in revenue and popularity for a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in a while, for them to make the playoffs would sort of reinvigorate the franchise. You would think all signs point to, okay, they're going to make a move and get Jonathan Lucroy because they would be willing to bear a bigger price than another franchise to go get him. But with the lock to win the division with 89%, it's almost, you know, that almost takes away from them wanting to go get him. You know, like, what
really... I agree. Why? Right. It's like you're a team that you have all this young pitching and you're somewhat young. Like, you're relatively young overall. If you're that good to get in the tournament, I don't think you need to push it this year. So, maybe you don't need to trade for a Lucroy. Maybe you trade for, one of the Mets got, like, Darnell or Plawecki, or a team who has two good catchers or something like that. You know, like, maybe you make a baby deal. Or you could just wait till the offseason to address it, right? Like you're saying. But like we said, they're so bad. So let's do this. I'm going to go through each position, right? And look at the team output by position, and I want to ask you who your guess is, like, one of the worst. So, like, DH, like, guess who the worst is?
Yankees.
No, the Rangers.
Prince Fielder.
Yeah, they're -2 wins. And so they're a team in contention, like we said, only 3.5 games up. DH is not a hard spot to upgrade, you would think, right?
Right. There's any number of bats on the market that you could plug into DH, and just with the flexibility of being able to, you know, your pool is basically unlimited of position players from different positions you can plug into DH.
Right.
And one thing I really like about the Rangers is the versatility they have with a player like Jerickson Profar, who could play all around the infield. You know, that even just sets them up even more for being able to find someone they can just plug into DH and get production. Carlos Beltran is a player that makes a lot of sense to me for that.
For the Rangers?
For the Rangers in the DH, that sort of mold. I think he will probably end up with a team more like, you know, the Indians, as we're watching the Yankees win, so maybe they view themselves as buyers right now.
We can only hope they're buyers, dude. I mean, they're sellers. Jeez, we can only hope they're sellers. So, if you hear an edit here, it's because we recorded twice the rest of this episode, and both times the mic has been totally screwed up. And I guess we're just going to call these the lost tapes, you know, these lost episodes. They were amazing. I mean, you can trust me. They were amazing. But I'm just going to have to finish this episode an hour after we recorded the previous minute of tape. So Tom is in the bathroom right now. I'm going to continue the episode because we just found out that our second recording of the rest of the episode was ruined by the microphone, and he went to blow off a little steam and to pee out a little pee, I suppose. So, you know, you look at the DH spot, and to me, what's interesting is the question of, like, is the DH more coveted or more valuable or perceived to be more valuable in today's baseball than 10 years ago, right? Like, are teams more willing to pay now for a guy who hits and does nothing else, or were they than they were 10 years ago? Like, on one hand, the numbers and the trends of WAR and versatility make you think that the player who could play a position is more valuable and that the DH would be less valuable. But on the other hand, with offense down, even though home runs are up, that makes you think that the DH would be more valuable than 10 years ago. So I asked Tom about this before, and I'm going to ask him again for the second time now. What do you think that the DH is more valuable or less valuable than 10 years ago?
I would say that the DH is less valuable than it was 10 years ago. I think that you can make the argument that having an elite DH is more valuable than it was 10 years ago when you look at someone like David Ortiz and the offensive numbers he's putting up, especially in the grand scheme of how tight offense has been in the post-steroid era, having an elite DH is more valuable than it ever was. But I think, you know, if the eighth or ninth best, say, DH in the AL, I feel like that's a position where the value has kind of been eroded by how much teams like to rest players, how teams like to put players at different positions and match up with starting pitching. So I think when you sign a player and you just pencil him in and slot him in as DH every single day and you don't expect to get any value out of him defensively, I feel like, you know, there's just really not as much value there as there once was.
Word up. I think you're misspeaking, or maybe this is what you mean, but I think you mean that people have realized that there's not as much value as there used to be, because this is about perception. If anything, the DH would actually be more valuable with less offense today, no? Like a good hitter who does nothing else provides more, their value probably hasn't changed, but the cost, no? Do you mean that they're actually less valuable?
Well, I think it's a combination of both.
Senator.
No, it definitely is. You know, how many elite DHs are there in the American League? You have Ortiz, Encarnacion.
But, there can only be so many elite DHs. Like, I feel you. But as everybody knows, you know, it's well known in ESPN and the popular media that you personally, Tom McLaughlin, overvalue utility, versatility, because you're a schmuck.
I'm a schmuck.
No, that's very offensive. I'm sorry. I just think like we've said, like, how many points of on base are you willing to give up to have versatility that you may never use?
20.
Wow, that was really surprisingly quick with little...
20.
You had the exact number to a pretty intricate question. It's as if we've done this episode 3 frickin' times and my mic isn't working and we have to re-record some things.
Wait, I gave a straight answer?
It's just you knew the exact number without even acting like you had to even think. It's amazing. Excuse me. Okay, so like, yo, we're I got work in the morning. We're kind of fried out of fresh ideas. Not fresh ideas. We've talked about stuff in 3 amazing. They were so good, these episodes.
Hey, shut your mouth. Don't get to the closing. Okay. I got a message to the Yankees brass, specifically Hal Steinbrenner and Randy Levine.
Okay.
You've won 3 of 4 games.
I'll listen to him.
And you feel like you have some momentum rolling here. But yes, sell us. Sell, goddammit.
You're the Carlos Gomez of baseball teams.
Please.
You are so hateable. You swing for the fences, and yet you can't hit the ball. You have negative 0.9 more. Guys, sell.
Look, you got to trade Carlos Beltran. He's going to get hurt. It's just going to be karma. He's going to roll his ankle or something. Can you please just give up on this season, and let's build towards 2018 when we get Bryce Harper? Now, I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is because I know that you don't want to give up and signal to the market that, you know, we're done this year. So that,
and they're not just going to listen to you unless you put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
So I have some quarters down here you could borrow. Let's see. Put them in your mouth.
All right, so I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I will, when A-Rod is at 699 home runs, I will pay full ticket price to come to the game if it is at home, and I will buy a $39.99 A-Rod 700 home run hat from the store.
It's
and
amazing.
You know what? If you sell and you get back packages that I like, let's say you get Kyle Schwarber, for example, I may even go into the store and buy one of those Hello Kitty stuffed toys with Tanaka, like, in mind, that they sell at Yankee Stadium, because, you know, they sell all of this, like, cultural type stuff in the shop now. So, you know what?
All this cultural jibber jabber. You know, the liberals want cultural. Cultural. All right, so go on. What? We know what? What?
What I'm saying is,
you made a good point earlier that the $40, they could even invest, right? And with compound interest, it would be something like, I don't know, what, in 2 years when Bryce Harper, maybe at least $400,000.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you invest in cap figure stock, you know,
it goes,
you could just
what,
make this
up. 100,000.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, Hal, Randy,
Mr. Levine. Mr. Levine, is it true you ordered the Knish and didn't like the mustard?
If you can't do it for the good of the baseball operations staff and for the good of your future of your roster,
do it for $400,000.
Yeah, do it for $400K.
I'm laughing because it's fun. It's like that is the incentive of all incentives in life. Do it or my McCann normal head gets smashed right in the face. All right, this is a horrible. This is like our mic fiasco is a mess.
No excuses. Play like a champion. Listen to episode 7. Subscribe to us on iTunes and check out our Twitter feed.
Word up. Last thing, you're an idiot. Bah, got you.